My name is Roy Bloomhorst. Roy works real fine. And I'd like to let you know what I'm going to try to do in this period of time. For 5 years, I went around doing workshops with people that helped those people to think about, affirm, identify their own ministry. And the reason for the workshop kind of approach was that it seemed that many, many, many words had been told at people about ministry. What people seemed to need was a chance to think about their own, to look at it. So what I want to do with you is one of the first session out of that workshop, which always seemed to be pretty helpful at getting down to this business of identifying my own ministry. And the way we'll go at it is to first of all have a little exercise that sharpens some of the questions. Then we'll kind of talk about hopefully some of the insights and questions that come out of that exercise. I like to make sure we're not talking about all kinds of things that you're not interested in. So this is a way of kind of getting at what is it that would be helpful to you to look at around your ministry. Okay? So for the exercise, it's very important that you not think. The only thing that's important is that you have two pieces of paper like this and something to write on. You got? Okay, two pieces of paper, because the first thing I want you to do with the two pieces of paper is tear them in half. Okay, now you got four pieces of paper. I would like to ask you, today is Wednesday, right? Can you just spend 30 seconds trying to pick up last Wednesday? Can you try to locate that real quickly? Because what I want you to do is kind of quickly run through your previous week. In other words, from last Wednesday to now. Just put on that tape if you can for a minute and see if you can remember your past week. I don't mean in great detail, but just think about it a minute. What all, kind of go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. No, for now we're just recalling. Not deeply, not thinking, just put it together. Okay? Now take your four pieces of paper and without thinking, not going into any depth, first it comes to your mind, write down four events out of your past week. Four sheets of paper. I'll give you some more paper. Four sheets of paper, one on each sheet, so that you've got, within a couple of minutes here, you've got four sheets of paper that represent four events out of your past week. Here's what I'd like you to do now. Take those four events, and now that you think just a little bit, put the most satisfying on the top, the next most satisfying till you're down to the least satisfying at the bottom. So we want you to stack them so that you kind of got, now that you look at those four events, the most satisfying at the top and the least satisfying at the bottom. So you're going to somebody said once they're all less satisfying, so it was it ranged from unsatisfying to most unsatisfying.
I know, yeah.
Now take the two middle events and pull them out and throw them away. We don't want to talk about those. Okay? Yeah. Everybody hates to give up the middle. Now you've got two events left. One of which, presumably you've got two events left, one of which is a little more satisfying than the other, or one of which is perhaps a little less satisfying than the other. Now, this is only notes to yourself, so you can write it any way you want scribbled around there, but I would like to ask you four questions about those two events. All right, you got two events left, and I want to ask you four questions. You don't have to write whole sentences or paragraphs or dissertations, but just so that right away you can talk with a couple of people, notes to yourself, okay? Number one, When was the event? Now that may be in your description of it, but was it Wednesday night, Saturday morning, Thursday afternoon? Just locate it in time. And I said if that was already in the description of the event, fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When was it? Okay. Who were you with for both events? We want you to do this. When was this event? For both events, when was it? Number two, who were you with?
I was with myself. I was with my family. I was with 30,000 people on a freeway. Just kind of who were you with?
Number three, what were you doing?
I was talking, I was listening, I was whatever, pounding nails.
What were you doing?
I was sound asleep.
And number four, what did this event have to do with your ministry? What did this event have to do with your ministry? Now obviously you may say, I don't think it had anything to do with it, or what the heck is my ministry, or this is what it had to do with it. That's really the stuff we're looking at. Whatever your answer is to that question is the good answer, okay? What did this event have to do with your ministry? And again, whatever your answer is, somebody's going to have to explain ministry, or however you're reacting to that question. What did this event have to do with your ministry? Okay. Now what I'd like to ask you to do is to spend a few minutes, a maximum of 15, with little groups of not less than three and not more than four. Okay? So if you can just kind of turn around and find yourself two or three people. Make sure you don't have more than four. Don't have enough time. Make sure it's not less than three. You don't have enough discussion. Okay? Little groups of three or four. Here's what I'd like you to do in your little groups. We don't need you to give a total report of your past week. What we do want is for you to spend a little time, especially on that fourth question around those two events, in which you can perhaps be saying, well, this is what the event was, and this is how I see it in relation to my ministry, which is that I don't see it, or why is he doing this anyway, or this is what I see. But make sure that every person in your group does get some chance to participate. Don't spend the whole 15 minutes on one person, okay? And make sure you get a little chance to talk about your past week, which has now been turned into two events instead of all of them, and your ministry, how you see it, what's going on, okay? So when you're finished, we hope there'll be some insights. We hope there'll be some questions. We hope there'll be some problems with what we're talking about, because that's the stuff then we want to work on together. Like to start hearing from you. Questions that you now have, or some kind of any kind of comments, so we can begin to talk about our ministries.
But exactly what do you mean by lay ministry?
Okay, the lady says.
Yeah.
Say just a little bit more.
What does it include?
What does and she added lay ministry include? Mm-hmm. Anybody want to start talking about that? Or what you folks would say, or what you were beginning to discover?
Everything.
Everything?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No.
No, okay, go ahead.
I'm in a kind of work where if I impose my lay ministry on someone, I'm out of a job.
All right. If I impose my ministry on someone, I'm out of a job. How does that go with everything?
Can't that be the job as the ministry in itself?
I just got some information from this man here as we were talking that really gave me, that was my bad day.
Okay, good.
And getting ready to get everybody taken care of so that I could come here. And his attitude was that I had fulfilled a commitment. And therefore, well, that helped me, because I thought it's not a totally horrible experience. I was doing something, a commitment I had made. But I don't see it as...
ministry.
Yeah.
Okay.
That isn't the way I equate a ministry.
Okay.
I was just going to say that that should be man's rule then. Let's see, I can't remember which one, but...
everything?
Yeah. In other words, God perhaps would want it to be everything, but we put rules and regulations on it.
Keep talking. We kind of are between everything and not everything, for what my ministry...
Because we've discussed this, I could also say that doing a good job of what she's doing is ministry.
Okay. Paul?
Right, to me, ministry is a lifestyle. It's a total thing. It is not an evangelizing. I wonder, are you equating... which is what I did, that you have to say you do it because Jesus, or say you've got to believe, kind of a come at you and bowl you over kind of thing. I don't think that's it. I think it's how you relate with every person, if you're doing that on a Christian level.
I like to think, too, that a lay ministry could be your job as a parent, mothering, fathering.
Feeling worse than ever.
Right. Right. We're gonna help you. Don't run off.
Well, ministry could mean what she does with her material possessions.
What about just the dictionary on the word minister?
Serve,
okay?
If there's no such thing as lay ministry, there's just ministry.
Such thing as lay, there's just ministry.
Well, I guess when I hear the word ministry, I don't think of, clergymen having a different ministry than I do. The uh-huh. Lord calls us all to do whatever we do, whether we're housewives or teachers or whatever we are, or clergymen, we still have a ministry. And I don't think there's a distinction in the Lord's sight between a clergy ministry and a lay ministry. We just are called a minister. Amen.
Let me try this on you to kind of give a couple of pegs around... I have trouble standing up, and then I realize I'm looking at a chimney, so I'll try to sit down. The word minister itself is simply a Latin form of serve, right? If you were reading in the King James Bible, it would say, even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister. If you were reading that in an RSV, some other translation, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. So just the most bare kind of understanding of the word minister would be serve. I'd like to share a little bit of, if you'll let me put in a couple of thoughts here, around the New Testament on ministry. One level of looking at ministry was any kind of serving. And a little book by Dr. Kemmerer and Dr. Luker on ministry and church points out that if you take all those words that have minister in them, somehow, either verb, noun, whatever, that probably over 60 to 70% of those have to do with some kind of physical act. You know, that minister simply was a very blah kind of word for serving somebody. Almost like if you were standing outside the door with your arms full of groceries, struggling to get in, and I held the door, there was a minute there that I served you, just plain helped you out. And that a lot of the New Testament references have to do with people who noticed that somebody else had some kind of a need, and they dealt with the need. It's as simple as that. I'm going to call that just physical, because I think it's good for us to affirm that a lot of the times when the New Testament is talking about ministering, it's simply talking about noticing the other person and dealing with where that person was. Even to things like
if your enemy hungers, feed him. You notice it doesn't go into a whole big discussion of go off to a corner and first of all figure out why is your enemy? You know, what should we do about that? But to be aware that that's where it is, you know, that this is happening. A second understanding, other references in the New Testament around ministry, have to do, and I don't, some of these words are funny, I'm going to call it truthing. You'll find in the New Testament an emphasis on there is a plan. That plan is usually related to the word truth. When Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, he isn't just saying, you can count on me not to tell a lie. You know, I'm a basically honest Savior, or something like that. He says, I am the truth. And when he was saying that word truth, at least some of the people understood what he meant, that he was the fulfillment of the way it is. Back some time ago, Lily Tomlin used to have that little routine, you know, as she'd finish off with, and that's the truth, you know, and that's the way it is. Well, Christians were people who had discovered the way it is. You know, this is the way it is that the world and all the people in it didn't just happen. They were created. The way it is that the world and all that's in it has been redeemed. And the way it is we're going a direction. You know, there's a point and a purpose, and that's what's happening. So when you let somebody in on the truth, you know, when you shared the truth with somebody, you had ministry. You know, you were to serve one another by letting each other, building each other up, to use a King James word, edification, building each other up in the truth. You know, when Christians would come together, again, I think when they talked about building each other up in the truth, they weren't just saying encourage each other to stop lying. They were saying, dig around in that plan. You know, be aware of the way it is. And I like to see the way these two fit in another little story out of the life of Jesus. You remember the 10 lepers? 10 lepers come to Jesus. They have leprosy. And Jesus heals them. You know? Very physical kind of need. They needed their leprosy healed, and they got their leprosy healed. 10 lepers walk off, and one person, one of them, comes back and says, wait a minute. You know, I think there's more to this guy. You know, I better at least go back and say thanks. Who knows when I'll need him again? And he comes back, and Jesus says, go your way. Your faith has made you well or whole, whichever one of those words you want to use. And the implication is, you've got the whole thing. You know, unfortunately, 9 were content with half the picture. That was really neat that their leprosy was cleansed. Neater yet would have been if they had also gotten a hold on the truth, you know, on the relation of leprosy to the whole thing, on what can be done about the whole picture, not just the physical leprosy. And I think that's the way it is a lot in our ministries, right? I mean, we do lots of this level. When I say level, I don't mean one's better than the other, just kind. We do. Maybe that's even the proportion, 9 out of 10 times. We're kind of operating at noticing what people, where they are, and how to be with them.
Roy?
Yeah.
Going along with that, on the truthing, it seems to me that ministering is not always just being a pleasant experience. If we take Christ's ministry as an example, he offended a lot of people, and he asked a lot of questions that made them uncomfortable. He questioned their value system. And, you know, I think that's a big part of ministry, too.
Keep talking. Especially around truthing, right?
Right?
Because a lot of us aren't that excited about the truth either.
Right.
More. Great. Let's throw the other word in, I mean the other kind of talking about ministry, and that was in the Christian community, people would call upon each other to perform specific activities. Joe, will you read the letter that we received from Peter in the congregation? Paul and Silas, will you head around the Mediterranean doing, sharing what we're talking about? The Christians did call each other to specific kinds of activities. And so I'm just going to call those kind of assignments. And it seems to me here's where in our history there's been some atrophy, that we have tended to emphasize one assignment and to forget the other kinds of ministry and also the other assignments. And that is the assignment to preside in the worship of the congregation. You know, often we talk about that person as the minister. You know, that's the one who we call the minister. That is a ministry. That is one of the ministries to which that person has been called. I guess it got very important to me to begin to realize that I had not solved the question of ministry by becoming a pastor. That as though one group of people really has to struggle with that, the other has it made. You know, they'd figured it out. They went to the seminary. I began to realize that my role as citizen, my role as human being, my role as father, all those kinds of places where I found myself were places where I needed to talk about my ministry. You know, how is that going? And the fact that a group of people had called me to preside over the worship service, to perform certain functions, was indeed a part of my ministry. But it was not like that was the ministry. It's like that was one of the things I had to look at too. So we're forever giving each other assignments. We call each other to do this. We call each other to be that. We call each other for another kind of activity. And I'd like to remember for my life that all three of these are kind of how I begin to think when I think of my ministry. You know, my being aware of other people, my commitment to letting myself and others in on the truth and building each other up in the truth, and the kind of specific assignments that I get that happened to me. That was more than you wanted to hear. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to...
I don't mean to give speeches now.
To just give this thought out, too. I belong to a church where many of the people were very resentful if the pastors assigned different things for the lay people, so mm-hmm. to speak, to do. They would present that the pastor is hired to do this thing, so he should be doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of the rest of you have had that in your churches, but that was very prevalent in the church that I belong to.
Yeah. Our pastor answers that by saying when he goes on vacation or the staff is a little down for the week, he says, well, we have 2,000 other ministers here at St. Paul's.
This may get us into another whole area, but I'm going to do it anyway, okay? As part of my job, I also went around dealing with the relations of pastors and congregations. Sometimes there'd be a problem, you know, something wasn't working right or whatever. Got important, I think that discussion needs more work than we often give it credit for. What is the pastor hired to do? In other words, I think too quickly we say he's hired to be the same as all the rest of us. I think that kind of ignores a lot of seminary training. It ignores the relation of paying people money. I'm going to try this on you.
I think it comes from, we used to call him preacher. He was the preacher.
Okay.
And you see, just using that, he is the only one to do the preaching.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them feel so inferior that they would never get up and give a talk even.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's overdone, you see.
All right.
Rather than the ministry.
It's changing.
Yeah, I was going to say, this could be too, because in the days of past, the minister or the preacher was maybe the only educated one. But now the people are becoming so educated that the picture is changing.
I find a need to help pastors distinguish, and I'm going to use the word to mean what I want, like Alice in Wonderland, a word means what I want it to mean rather than somebody else, okay? Helping pastors understand their vocation and their profession. And I'll admit this goes a lot of directions, but I think a lot of pastors don't quite understand that they have a whole vocation which they would be doing whether or not the congregation paid them. In other words, I think I got my ministry from my baptism, and that dealing with forgiving somebody, being concerned about what's going on in my community, all those kind of things are part of my, I'm going to call, vocation here. And I'm going to use profession in a very, in a way that a lot of people don't like. You know, the way you become a professional golfer or a professional racetrack driver or a professional electrician or a professional anything, I'm using kind of an American sense, is you start getting paid. You know, somebody pays you to do something. I think we tend to overlook that in congregations, that we do in fact make a commitment to somebody to do some things. So what it usually helps to do is to try to look at, why do we make a commitment to a person to offer to pay that person's salary, and for what are we doing that? I don't think we're just paying that person to be a Christian. I think we're paying for some things that we need as part of this congregation. And I think you can talk about them, and they can be different. What I usually do with a congregation and a pastor in that is give them a little checklist. High priority, low priority, none of his business or her business, okay? And again, the discussion is the valuable part. Have the congregation do that checklist, and then have the pastor do it, and then say, okay, now you folks maybe need to get together. What do you think are the professional requirements? Counseling? You know, is that one of it? Or is it what kind of counseling? That's kind of helpful to work some of that out. Are we paying? Or in other words, are we making an agreement with each other to do that?
What about the pastor's family? Are they important in the life of the church? Whether they go to church or something or not? We were told that we would hire the pastor's family.
I'm not the one to answer questions. Go ahead. What are the rest of you? I want to answer it for my family and me.
Well, see, that's where the question of vocation and profession really is really accentuating that. Mm-hmm. I think the vocation of the family as Christians would be very similar in concept. The profession aspect of it is, I think, what Roy even talking about. I don't think a congregation hires a whole family, and if we muddy those two up, there can be some pretty uncomfortable, unpleasant experiences if the expectations are for the family also to be hired to be the professional. I think that's really got to make, that's where that can be a helpful distinction.
Joan?
I'm not in the minister's family, but it would appear to me that professionally you definitely don't hire an entire family. If I'm a single person and I become a minister, you're hiring me and me alone. Now, what is reflected maybe in the family puts a pressure upon the family, which I don't think is fair to the family. I think the wife and the family have already sacrificed by a husband who is a pastor in terms of time and energy, which is almost totally committed to the church. And I would be unhappy to think that my pastor has to set the example of what his family is in order to be the pastor of the church
tonight. I firmly disagree with that, because I think every member of the family has to minister. by just the physical and the truthing and the assignment, I think that a pastor's wife definitely should feel an assignment. Like she might want to sing in the choir. Maybe she doesn't have that ability, but she could certainly have the assignment of feeling, oh, I can do so many things in ministering, if it's only to call on someone who is needy in the congregation, or maybe joining in to make quilts or whatever.
I want to make a comment about my family and then move into another area pretty soon, because I have a feeling that pastors do not outnumber the crowd here, and that I don't want to get us too far away from talking about our ministries. I mean, it's going to be easy to talk about the pastor's ministry here. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that for have to and should implies demands. And that for someone to be able to, I feel like anybody who's a pastor's wife must be running around with a little thing up here, you know, just by the very nature of a job. But I think that when you start saying have to and should, I agree with the profession, the vocation.
I think, you know, if we were to put that expectation on the pastor's family, then that expectation should be on every single family in the congregation.
Amen.
Amen. That's what I meant. It should be on any family.
One of the most heartwarming events for me was when I left the congregation in D.C. and they had the usual farewell, and the president of the congregation got up to speak and said, you know, when we called this particular pastor, we were totally misinformed about his family. Their records had indicated that we had one child. We came with three, and that was confusing to them, where we had picked those up on the trip. And he said, very sloppy about what the family was. He said, I just want to make, and his whole little speech was, he said, I just want to make one comment, that if we had it to do over, I would call this pastor for the wife of this pastor, because she so helped free a bunch of us up about our participation in the congregation. Vernette came to the congregation, followed a pastor's family where the wife was kind of an assistant in many ways, held the ladies' aid together, you know, really did lots of neat work, very important in the Sunday school. Vernette is not the most institutional church-oriented person, has very kinds of, you know, goes to church, thinks through her ministry, but had a very interesting time the first year or two when somebody would say, well, Mrs. So-and-so always, and Vernette would say, I think that was really wonderful. And, you know, she wouldn't put that down. She'd say, it's really good. I don't happen to do very well with little kids. You know, we've always admitted that. She was very adamant about not teaching in the Sunday school. That was not one of her gifts to do that. Other things would come up, and she would kind of stick to her no. You know, she would kind of say no. She did other things that she very much wanted to participate in, but that was because they fit her. And it really impressed me that this president said, you know, most of us were a little angry at first about how uninvolved she was. But they said as we began to understand that she was picking her way and saying, you know, I am the one who has to determine what I am doing, not just because I'm in that role.
By
it taught the rest of us how to do that. You know, it helped a lot of us do that.
By her not doing that, she opened up space for other people who could then become involved because she wasn't taking it over.
And the other thing was that I've been into several kinds of jobs, and there's no way that your family isn't touched by whatever you do. You know, there's no way you can say there's absolutely no connection. I mean, there are some meetings that you have to go to, in a sense. There are some things you have to do. Okay, how about moving another kind of area out of some other things? That's a hard one to... What else came out of your little groups around ministry, your ministry?
Kind of an interesting question came up. Attending worship, is that part of ministry? Is that doing ministry? That's a question. And do we separate that particular activity, which is a physical activity, from other things? I think we tend to think of worship as contributing to ministry, being a resource for ministry, but is the actual act of worship a ministry?
I really think it is. To me, it's a renewal of the ministry. You have to have that as part of it. So to me, the act of worship is a renewal.
I know some people that don't believe in going to, like, our Lutheran church, but they get a few families together and they meet in homes and they read the Bible and they witness and they get, you know, very active in their group. And they say that is more worshipful than our Lutheran church.
I'd like to put another word up here, and it's just the word are. I think that helps clarify some of our talking with each other about our ministry too. You notice it's the word are rather than should be or could be. It's kind of interesting. Usually when those folks who are not pastors or teachers are, again, professionals in the sense of paid people in the church, get together to talk about their ministry, you often hear phrases like, I ought to be a minister in this way, or I could be ministering if, or I should be ministering in this kind of way. When Paul talks about ministry, the few times when he addresses somebody, he is assuming they are ministers. You are ministers by virtue of your baptism. In other words, if what minister means is servant, when I got baptized, I became a full-time servant of Jesus Christ. For one group of people, we help them understand that. Again, we're back to pastors, teachers, whatever. We decide we need, you know, we're vacant, we need a pastor. Congregation has a meeting, they beseech the Holy Spirit, they have an election, and so-and-so is named. So-and-so gets the call, debates with the Holy Spirit in prayer, and accepts the call. Comes to the, you know, now that person has a very nice understanding, you know, name is actually on the document. Then the congregation goes even further, just to make sure everybody understands that that person is it. They have an installation service, you know. We install so-and-so to be the pastor at this place. Well, 3 weeks later, the debate for that pastor is not, am I the pastor here or not? It's just how it's going. The people may say, oh, we didn't know he preached like that. They're not debating whether or not the person is a pastor. They're just debating how it's going, right? That's the only kind of discussion. But when the rest of the ministers get together, they often debate whether or not they are, you know, because we haven't done a clear job of saying, you are. That's it. One of the goals of these kind of sessions for me is that the next time you get together, you would be able simply to address the question, how's your ministry going? You know, not are you or aren't you? That's why I picked the little events out of your week, because I wanted to operate on the assumption that you are. The question is not, had I asked you, take four pieces of paper and indicate on those four pieces of paper four ways you could be in ministry, what a different discussion we would have had. You know, we'd have been into, wow, if only, or I really should, or I feel guilty, or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But we were just assuming you are, and we're asking, how's it going? You know, how is your ministry going? Paul uses about your ministry, you are, you know, because you got baptized. It's a being which has some doing, but the doing is not where it's located. It's in the being, if I can use that kind of language. You are. So that's to me kind of a freeing question. You know, we've often suggested congregations, six of you can agree to get together once a month. and just ask each other how your ministry's going. And you can say, right now, it is going miserably. You know, this is, I'm confused, or this isn't working for me, or whatever. It's okay. That doesn't mean you're not a minister, that it's going poorly. You don't even know if it's going poorly. You know, it's a different question. And that's why when we talk about ministers, it seems to me, yeah, ministers worship, ministers tell one another off, ministers blow it, ministers get excited, ministers are. You know, that's kind of where it is. That's a very important word to me, the word are. And I always measure success in this by, I'll run into somebody 2 years later and I'll say, Roy, how's your ministry going? And they see, I can have changed jobs, I can have, all kinds of things can happen. But it's still a good question. You know, how's it going? And you can do that with each other on Sunday morning. How's your ministry going? And you can say, I mean, go ahead.
Well, I think one of the problems with people identifying with having a ministry is that when they think of ministry, they think of, oh, well, you know, we should be calling in the hospital. Mm-hmm. If somebody's troubled, we should be there, almost like a counseling kind of ministry. Something that, oh, I can't do that. I'm not trained. But, you know, it's, I guess I get the feeling it's as you said over there earlier, that it's a lifestyle. You know, it's the way, it's a being, the way we are in our life. And warts and all. It's a hard thing for people to comprehend sometimes.
Maybe I can go ahead.
I think, too, that, you know, our ministry need not be compared with anybody else's ministry, and that came out a little bit in our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this struck home a little bit to me when I started working at a particular job. I replaced a woman who had been there 10 years, and it happened to be in the schools, and I was a librarian, and this little kid in December, after I'd been there since September, and he realized that changes were being made, he said, he raised his hand, all 6 years old, and said, when is the lady who owns this place coming back? And the comparison there of her ministry to mine, evidently he wasn't too sure which one he should go for.
Right.
But I think that in ministry in God's kingdom, which is our world, you know, we may wonder when whoever owns this place is coming back, but until then, we've still got the job to do, and our ministry maybe not stretch too much beyond the four walls of our house, but still, that's our ministry, whatever it be. And we don't need to compare it to anybody else.
I think there's a way of not comparing, built around the parables, and that's the hiddenness of ministry. The disciples every now and then get kind of discouraged, don't they? They say, look, we're doing this, and this is the result. You know, what's wrong here? And you ever notice how Jesus answered that?
Mm-hmm.
Usually didn't give them any help. But he mostly talked about the hiddenness of the whole enterprise. It's like fish that you catch in a net, and you take them all in, and at the last day, we'll do the sorting. It's like weeds in wheat. You don't tear up the wheat. You wait till the last day. That's related to our ministry. You see, our ministry is to penetrate. I once was working on a couple of pieces of pipe that I was trying to get moved from each other, and I had to go down to the hardware store and get some penetrating oil. This, I'm not as poetic as Christ was, but it became a great illustration to me for how our ministry works. You know, what I did is I got these two joints, and I'm not getting anywhere, so I get the penetrating oil, and you know, the first thing that penetrating oil has to do is disappear. You know, if it stays on the top of the surface, and I say, oh, what beautiful oil, look at the texture, it's just great oil, we're not going to get anywhere. The next thing that happens when I put the oil on is that it disappears. You know, I stop thinking about it, because what it's doing is getting down into the joints, where it makes a difference. Have you ever thought about how Christ talks about us penetrating? How what happens is, here comes the congregation together on Sunday morning. Don't they look beautiful? Nice texture, wonderful color, all that kind of stuff. And then they walk out of that door, and their job is to get lost. It's to disappear into every nook and cranny of life. Now, if they're all going to stay there and look beautiful, how's that going to get any joints moving? You know, how's that going to affect what's happening in the world. So they disappear. And as they disappear, you know, they get all, they don't often know how this all fits together. Dick Newhouse once had a great article on the loneliness of the long-distance radical. His point being that the people that are really radical are committed to something that's way long beyond them. You know, they don't see the nice kind of results of what's going on. And they are the ones who are content to continue to do what they see needs to be done or be how they see being, with the realization that at the last day, according to Dick Newhouse says, Christ will turn them around and say, now I'll show you how that was fitting. You know, I'll show you how it was useful. And that they have one promise, and that is nothing is ever wasted. My little daughter is on a campaign, she's been on it for 5 years, to make Martin Luther King's birthday a national holiday. And she got in on one of these nothing is ever wasted things. You know, you just keep on. It's not wasted, even though you don't understand the connection. It's a hidden ministry. So every successive legislature, you know, when President Carter got elected, I knew what was going to happen. Next morning, well, Dad, just like you say, nothing is ever wasted. Dear President Carter, I am interested. And I don't, you know, I can't say whether that's going to happen or isn't going to happen. I know it makes her kind of an interesting person. she's willing to. I think part of our problem with our ministry, and one of the reasons we admire, again, professionals, is that we see the connection. We see the pastor call on this sick person and the help that that is. We see the person teaching Sunday school and the impact that has. But the hidden one, and I think it's important to realize that Christ does not give you clues for how to translate. He just says it's hidden. That's where it is. It's hidden. Okay, good. I'm going to give you one more word and we'll go, since it fits with this hiddenness. It's the word ecumene. A lot of people say, when they start to talk about their ministry, they say, well, I don't have much of a ministry because I'm not in a position to talk to many people. I drive a tractor, or, you know, something like that. The assumption being that ministry is talk, you know, that it's when I do that. Again, we got three dimensions up here, and we're not putting down the talking, but I think that little word ecumene has a lot of freeing power for us. Kathleen Bliss wrote a little book called We the People around Ministry of the Laity, and she has a whole chapter on ecumene. Ecumene, we mostly think of ecumenical as when the churches get together. You know, it's when the Baptists and the Lutherans decide to stop calling each other names. That's ecumenical. We ought to look back a little more deeply to that word, oikos and mene, the Greek words, oikos as house, and mene is the whole thing. You know, like when you're playing charades and you're trying to say the whole thing, you know, when you tack that on. If you were to read in Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and all its inhabitants. That's God's big house. Oikumene. Ecumene. The world and all its inhabitants. Illustration. When our kids were younger, especially, we'd sometimes be gone for the day. Come back. Shambles. The living room looks like Phyllis Diller says, call the Salvation Army and give it. You know, it's too late. Can't do anything about it. The kitchen is peanut butter from wall to wall. One of the times when we were doing that, my wife said as we were surveying the wreckage, this house isn't fit to live in. You know, that's her assumption. Joe Sittler said that when he began to be concerned about what was happening to Lake Michigan, he thought the people to turn to were those who realized who made Lake Michigan. The ones who said every Sunday morning, we know who made Lake Michigan. Yeah, isn't that what they say? I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. And the Hebrews laughed at the other religions for thinking God lived in a little house called a temple. You know, they said, our God is in the heavens and he does whatever he wants. You know, that was their understanding. Well, if the whole thing is God's house instead of this little temple, then what I'm doing with it is pretty important, isn't it? A little lady in Japan, in Hawaii, a little Japanese lady, as she was talking about her ministry, said, well, you know, I live on a block where many people walk to and from work. And she said they walk there in the morning, come back in the evening. And she said they often look kind of worn out. And I want to make sure that this block is a very pleasant place for them to walk. So she spends a lot of time on the garden, on taking care of trees and things on that block. And she says, I think, you know, I don't know if it helps them or not, but I know they seem to like walking down that block. I think she was kind of understanding God's house. My father, long before it was in vogue to contour the land, plowed on the contour, and his reason was not, I'll make more money. He later discovered he would, because he'd save some of it for himself. But his reason was, we got to leave the land for the people that follow us. You know, we talk about owning that acre. Put that in a sweep of a million years, we owned that acre. I mean, we were one little bitty time in that acre's being there. I think he was understanding God's big house. You know, that as I work with the house. Okay, we got to quit. Just this much. This afternoon, instead of a discussion of Christianity in real life, I'm going to have a little discussion of one article that a lady wrote talking about how it's, when we tell people your ministry is your job, that's a little too easy. There are people that do have meaningless jobs. It's a good little article, so when you hear book discussion group, it's going to be an article discussion group in my shallow. Okay, thank you.